Lost in Chapter 8, this is Dracula, and it's a letter from Sister Agatha, dear old Sister Aggie, Hospital of St. Joseph and St. Mary, Budapest, to Miss Wilhelmina, what a marvellous name that is, Murray. 12th of August. Dear Madam, I write by desire of Mr. Jonathan Harker, who is himself not strong enough to write. Though progressing well, thanks to God and St. Joseph and St. Mary. Of course, thanks to them. And a nourishing pot noodle, though which he had garlic-flavoured pot noodle, which is just consumed using St. Joseph's original spork from the Holy Land. Carved from, yeah, anyway, whatever. He has been under our care for nearly 6 weeks, suffering from a violent brain fever. He wishes me to convey his love and to say that by this post I write for him to Mr. Peter Hawkins, Exeter, to say with his dutiful respects that he is sorry for his delay and that all of his work is complete. He will require some few weeks' rest in our sanatorium in the hills, which is like a centre parks, only nicer, but will then return. He wishes me to say that he has not sufficient money with him, and that he would like to pay for his staying here, and also to send me and the nuns off for an all-inclusive at Sunny Beach, so that others who need shall not be wanting for help. Believe me, yours with sympathy and all blessings, and hoping for that Sunny Beach all-inclusive, Sister Agatha. P.S. My patient being asleep, I played a little bit of Fruit Ninja. I open this to let you know something more. He has told me all about you and that you are shortly to be his wife. All blessings to you both. He has had some fearful shock, so says our doctor, and in his delirium his ravings have been dreadful of wolves and poison and blood, of ghosts and demons, and I fear to say of what. Oh, all right then. Oh, bad creatures. Mad pangolin. Be careful of him, always, that there may be nothing to excite him of this kind for a long time to come. I don't know what she's saying. The traces of such an illness as his do not lightly die away. We should have written long ago, but we knew nothing of his friends, and there was nothing on him, nothing that anyone could understand. He came in the train from Klausenberg, and the guard was told by the station master there that he rushed into the station shouting for a ticket for home, a one-way ticket. Seeing from his violent demeanour that he was English, they gave him a ticket for the furthest station on the way thither that the train reached. Be assured that he is well cared for. He has won all hearts by his sweetness and gentleness. He is truly getting on well, and I have no doubt will in a few weeks be all himself. But be careful of him for safety's sake. There are, I pray God and St. Joseph and St. Mary, many, 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 many happy years for you both. I added a few many's there for colour. For colour. Dr. Seward's diary. Dr. Seward's dairy, where he makes kefir, strawberry-flavoured kefir, and other fermented dairy items. No, it's Dr. Seward's diary. 19th of August. Oh, does Dr. Seward, doesn't he run the lunatic asylum? I think he does. Strange and sudden change in Renfield last night. About 8 o'clock he began to get excited and sniff about as a dog does when setting. The attendant was struck by his manner, not his spanner, and, knowing my interest in him, encouraged him to talk. He's usually respectful to the attendant, and at times servile. But tonight the man tells me he was quite haughty. Would not condescend to talk with him at all. It's a bit common, this bloke, isn't it? All he would say was, "I don't want to talk to you. You don't count now. The master is at hand." Hello. The attendant thinks it is some form of religious mania which has seized him. If so, we must look out for squalls. For a strong man, with homicidal and religious mania at once, might be dangerous. The combination is a dreadful one. Take homicidal mania and religious mania into the bath at once. At 9 o'clock I visited him myself. His attitude to me was the same as that to the attendant. In his sublime self-feeling, the difference between myself and the attendant seemed to him as nothing. It looked like religious mania, and he will soon think that he himself is God. Ah, yes. These infinitesimal distinctions. Oh, dear, I shouldn't really be doing this. I'm tired. I haven't had my tea yet. I'd like my tea. It's some nice pork steaks. I do enjoy a little bit of pork. No offence to anyone listening who doesn't like pork, but I quite enjoy it. With a little strange sauce that I knocked up. It's a sort of second day revisiting of the dish. But it's not unpleasant. These infinitesimal distinctions between man and man are too paltry for an omnipotent being. How these madmen give themselves away. The real God taketh heed lest a sparrow fall. But the God created from human vanity sees no difference between an eagle and a sparrow. Oh, if men only knew. For half an hour or more, Renfield kept getting excited in a greater and greater degree. I did not pretend to be watching him, but I kept strict observation all the same. All at once that shifty look came into his eyes, which we always see when a madman has seized an idea, and with it the shifty movement of the head and back, which asylum attendants come to know so well. He became quite quiet and went and sat on the edge of his bed resignedly, and looked into space with lacklustre eyes. Belonging to his former cellmate Perkins, he had retained those lacklustre eyes in his top pocket, as it turned out. Anyway, there you go. It's comedy. I thought I would find out if his apathy were real or only assumed. I know mine's assumed. And try to lead him to talk of his pets. A theme which has never failed to excite his attention, nor mine. At first he made no reply, but at length said testily, "Bother them all, I don't care a pin about them." "What?" I said. "You don't mean to tell me you don't care about spiders?" Spiders at present are his hobby, and the notebook is filling up with columns of small figures. To this he answered enigmatically, "The bride maidens rejoice the eyes that wait the coming of the bride, but when the bride draweth nigh, then the maidens shine not the eyes that are filled." He would not explain himself, but remained obstinately seated on his bed all the time I remained with him. I am weary tonight and in low spirits. I cannot but think of Lucy, and how things might have been. How different things might have been. If I don't sleep at once, chloral, the modern Morpheus. I must be careful not to let it grow into a habit. No, I shall take none tonight. I've thought of Lucy, and I shall not dishonour her by mixing the two. If need be, tonight shall be sleepless. Mixing the two, I've thought of Lucy, and I shall not dishonour her by mixing... thinking about her with chloral. A drug, is that what he means? I have no idea. Later. Glad I made the resolution. gladder that I kept to it. I had lain tossing about, and had heard the clock strike only twice, when the night watchman came to me, sent out from the ward, to say that Renfield had escaped. I threw on my clothes and ran down at once. My patient is too dangerous a person to be roaming about. Those ideas of his might work out dangerously with strangers. The attendant was waiting for me. He said he had seen him not 10 minutes before, seemingly asleep in his bed, when he had looked through the observation trap in the door. His attention was called by the sound of the window being wrenched out. He ran back and saw his feet disappear through the window, and had at once sent up for me. He was only in his night gear. Count Dracula onesie, which seemed to be popular now, and cannot be far off. Oh no, it's Count Dracula. Yeah, sorry. The attendant thought it would be more useful to watch where he should go than to follow him, as he might lose sight of him whilst getting out of the building by the door. He's a bulky man, and couldn't get through the window. Rude, fattest. I am thin. I am thin, so with his aid I got out, but feet foremost, and as we were only a few feet above the ground, landed unhurt. Good for you for being thin. The attendant told me the patient had gone to the left, and had taken a straight line, so I ran as quickly as I could. As I got through the belt of trees, I saw a white figure scale the high wall which separates our grounds from those of the deserted house. I ran back at once, told the watchman to get 3 or 4 men immediately, and follow me into the grounds of Carfax, in case our friend might be dangerous. I got a ladder myself, they were lovely, lovely tights, and crossing the wall, dropped down on the other side. So feeble. I could see Renfield's figure just disappearing behind the angle of the house. So I ran after him. Very good idea. On the far side of the house, I found him pressed close against the old iron-bound oak door of the chapel. He was talking, apparently, to someone, but I was afraid to go near enough to hear what he was saying, lest I might frighten him and he should run off. Chasing an errant swarm of bees is nothing to following a naked lunatic when the fit of escaping is upon him. What a marvellous analogy. After a few minutes, however, I could see that he did not take note of anything around him, and so ventured to draw nearer to him, the more so as my men had now crossed the wall and were closing him in. I heard him say, "I am here to do your bidding, master. I am your slave, and you will reward me, for I shall be faithful. I have worshipped you long and afar off. Now that you are near, I await your commands, and you will not pass me by, will you, dear master, in your distribution of good things?" He is a selfish old beggar, anyhow. He thinks of the loaves and fishes, even when he believes his is in a real presence. His manias make a startling combination. When we closed in on him, he fought like a tiger. He is immensely strong, for he was more like a wild beast than a man. I never saw a lunatic in such a paroxysm of rage before, and I hope I shall not again. It is a mercy that we have found out his strength and his danger in good time. With strength and determination like his, he might have done wild work before he was caged. He is safe now, at any rate. Jack Shepherd himself couldn't get free from the strait waistcoat he keeps him restrained in, that keeps him restrained, and he's chained to the wall in the padded room. His cries are at times awful, but the silences that follow are more deadly still, for he means murder in every turn and movement. Just now he spoke coherent words for the first time. "I shall be patient, master. It is coming, coming, coming." So I took the hint and came too. I was too excited to sleep. but this dairy has quieted me, and I feel I should get some sleep tonight, diary.
Chapter 9.
Letter, Mina Harker to Lucy Westenra. Budapest, 24th of August. My dearest Lucy, I know you will be anxious to hear all that has happened since we parted at the railway station at Whitby, where we had a mini pork pie at the station cafeteria, did we not? Well, my dear, I got to Hull all right. We all did. And caught the boat to Hamburg, and then the train on here. I feel that I can hardly recall anything of the journey, except that I knew I was coming to Jonathan, and that, as I should have to do some nursing, I'd better get all the sleep I could. I found, my dear, one oh so thin and pale and weak-looking. I found my dear one, oh, so thin and pale and weak-looking. All the resolution has gone out of his dear eyes, and that quiet dignity which I told you was in his face has vanished. He is only a wreck of himself, and he does not remember anything that has happened to him for a long time past. At least he wants me to believe so, and I shall never ask. He has had some terrible shock, and I fear it might tax his poor brain if he were to try to recall it. Sister Agatha, who is a good creature and a born nurse, tells me that he wanted her to tell me what they were. But she would only cross herself and say she would never tell. That the ravings of the sick were the secrets of God, and that if a nurse, through her vocation, should hear them, she should respect her trust. She is a sweet, good soul. And the next day, when she saw I was troubled, she opened up the subject my poor dear raved about, added,
I can tell you this much, my dear, that it was not about anything which he has done wrong himself, and you, as his wife-to-be, have no cause to be concerned. He has not forgotten you, or what he owes to you. His fear was of great and terrible things which no mortal can treat of. I do believe the dear soul thought I might
be jealous, lest my poor dear should have fallen in love with any other girl, an East European girl, a peasant girl, perhaps. The idea of my being jealous about Jonathan, and yet, my dear, let me whisper, I felt a thrill of joy through me, when I knew that no other woman was a cause for trouble. I'm now sitting by his bedside, where I can see his face while he sleeps. He's waking. When he woke, he asked me for his coat, as he wanted to get something from the pocket. I asked Sister Agatha, and she brought all his things. I saw amongst them was his notebook, and was going to ask him to let me look at it, for I knew that I might find some clue to his trouble, good thinking. But I suppose he must have seen my wish in my eyes, for he sent me over to the window, saying he wanted to be quite alone for a moment. Then he called me back, and he said to me very solemnly, Wilhelmina. I knew then that he was in deadly earnest, for he has never called me by that name since he asked me to marry him. You know, my dear, my ideas of the trust between husband and wife, there should be no secret, no concealment. I have had a great shock, and when I try to think of what it is I feel, my head spins round, and I do not know if it was real, of the dreaming of a madman. You know I had brain fever, and that is to be mad. The secret is here. I do not want to know it. I want to take up my life here, with our marriage. For, my dear, we had decided to be married as soon as the formalities are complete. Are you willing, Wilhelmina, to share my ignorance? Here is the book. Take it, and keep it. Read it, if you will. But never let me know, unless, indeed, some solemn duty should come upon me to go back to the bitter hours, asleep or awake, sane or mad, recorded here. He fell back exhausted. God, so did I. And I put the book under his pillow and kissed him. I've asked Sister Agatha to beg the Superior to let our wedding be this afternoon, and am awaiting her reply. She has come and told me that the chaplain of the English Mission Church has been sent for. We are to be married in an hour, or as soon after as Jonathan wakes. Lucy, the time has come and gone. I feel very solemn, but very, very happy. Jonathan woke a little after the hour, and all was ready, and he sat up in bed, propped up with pillows. He answered his, "I will," firmly and strong. I could hardly speak. My heart was so full that even those words seemed to choke me. The dear sisters were so kind. Please God, I shall never, never forget them, nor the grave and sweet responsibilities I have taken upon me. I must tell you of my wedding present. When the chaplain and the sisters had left me alone with my husband, "Oh, Lucy, it is the first time I have written the words, 'my husband,' left me alone with my husband," I took the book from under his pillow and wrapped it up in white paper and tied it with a little bit of pale blue ribbon which was round my neck, and sealed it over the knot with sealing wax, and for my seal I used my wedding ring. Then I kissed it and showed it to my husband and told him that I would keep it so. And then it would be an outward and visible sign for us all our lives that we trusted each other, that he hadn't been had by three lady vampires back in Castle Dracula, that I would never open it unless it were for his own dear sake or for the sake of some stern duty. Then he took my hand in his, and, oh, Lucy, it was the first time he took his wife's hand, oh, my God, and said that it was the dearest thing in all the wide world, and that he would go through all the past again to win it, if need be. Would he? The poor dear meant to have said a part of the past, but he cannot think of time yet. And I shall not wonder if at first he mixes up not only the month but the year. Well, my dear, what could I say? I could only tell him that I was the happiest woman in all the wide world, and that I had nothing to give him except myself, my life, and my trust, and that with these went my love and duty for all the days of my life. And, my dear, when he kissed me and drew me to him with his poor, weak hands, it was like a solemn pledge between us. A solemn can of pledge, possibly. Yes, that can happen, can't it? It was like a solemn can of pledge between us. Lucy, dear, do you know... Pathetic. Lucy, dear, do you know why I tell you all this? It is not only because it is all sweet to me, but because you have been and are very dear to me. Well, she's not what she was, is she, to be honest? It was my privilege to be your friend and guide when you came from the schoolroom to prepare for the world of life. I want you to see now, and with the eyes of a very happy wife, whither duty has led me, so that in your own married life you too may be all happy as I am. My dear, please Almighty God, your life may be all it promises, a long day of sunshine with no harsh wind, no forgetting duty, no distrust. I must not wish you no pain, for that can never be, but I do hope you will always be as happy as I am now. Goodbye, my dear. I shall post this at once, and perhaps write you very soon again. I must stop, for Jonathan is waking. I must attend my husband. Your ever-loving Mina Harker. Letter Lucy Westenra to Mina Harker. Whitby. 30th of August, my dearest Mina, oceans of love and millions of kisses, and may you soon be in your own home with your husband. I wish you were coming home soon enough to stay with us here. The strong air would soon restore Jonathan. It has quite restored me. I have an appetite like a cormorant, am full of life and sleep well. You'll be glad to know that I have quite given up walking in my sleep. I think I have not stirred out of my bed for a week. That is when I once got into it at night. Arthur says I'm getting fat. By the way, I forgot to tell you that Arthur is here. We have such walks and drives and rides and rowing and tennis and fishing together, and I love him more than ever. He tells me that he loves me more, but I doubt that, for at first he told me that he couldn't love me more than he did then. But this is nonsense. There he is calling to me. So no more just at present from your loving Lucy. P.S. Mother sends her love. She seems better, poor dear. P.P.S. We are to be married on the 28th of September.
Dr. Seward's Diary. 20th of August. The case of Renfield grows even more interesting. He has now so far quieted that there are spells of cessation from his passion. For the first week after his attack he was perpetually violent. Then one night, just as the moon rose, he grew quiet and kept murmuring to himself, "Now I can wait, now I can wait." The attendant came to tell me, so I ran down at once to have a look at him. He was still in the strait waistcoat and in the padded room, but the suffused look had gone from his face and his eyes had something of their old pleading. I might almost say cringing softness. I was satisfied with his present condition and directed him to be relieved. Hello. The attendants hesitated, but finally carried out my wishes without protest. Good for them. Good for them. It was a strange thing that the patient had humour enough to see their distrust, for coming close to me, he said in a whisper, all the while looking furtively at them, "They think I could hurt you. Fancy me hurting you, the fools." It was soothing somehow to the feelings to find myself dissociated, even in the mind of this poor madman, from the others. But all the same, I do not follow his thought. Am I to take it that I have anything in common with him, so that we are, as it were, to stand together? Or has he to gain from me some good so stupendous? Or has he to gain from me some good so stupendous that my well-being is needful to him? I must find out later on. Tonight he will not speak. Even the offer of a kitten, or even a full-grown cat, will not tempt him. He will only say, "I don't take any stock in cats. I have more to think of now, and I can wait. This is terrible, isn't it? After a while, I left him. The attendant tells me that he was quiet until just before dawn, and that then he began to get uneasy and at length violent, until at last he fell into a paroxysm, which exhausted him so that he swooned into a sort of a coma, as he fell into a paroxysm which led him to fall into a coma. 3 nights has the same thing happened, violent all day, then quiet from moonrise to sunrise. I wish I could get some clue to the cause. It would almost seem as if there was some influence which came and went. Happy thought. We shall tonight play sane wits against mad ones. He escaped before without our help. Tonight he shall escape with it. We shall give him a chance and have the men ready to follow in case they are required. 23rd of August. The expected always happens. How well Disraeli knew life. Our bird, when he found the cage open, would not fly. So all our subtle arrangements were for naught. At any rate, we have proved one thing, that the spells of quietness last a reasonable time. We shall in future be able to ease his bonds for a few hours each day. I've given orders to the night attendant merely to shut him in the padded room, when once he is quiet, until the hour before sunrise. The poor soul's body will enjoy the relief, even if his mind cannot appreciate it. Hark, the unexpected again. I'm called. The patient has once more escaped. Later. Another night adventure. Renfield artfully waited until the attendant was entering the room to inspect. Then he dashed out past him and flew down the passage. I sent word for the attendants to follow. Again he went into the grounds of the deserted house.
house, and we found him in the same place, pressed against the old chapel door.
Pressed against the old chapel door.
Isn't that a Matt Munro song? When he saw me, he became furious, and had not the attendant seized him in time, he would have tried to kill me. As we were holding him, a strange thing happened. He suddenly redoubled his efforts, and then as suddenly grew calm. I looked round instinctively, but could see nothing. Then I caught the patient's eye and followed it, but could trace nothing as it looked into the moonlight, except a big bat, which was flapping its silent and ghostly way to the west. Bats usually wheel about, but this one seemed to go straight on, as if it knew where it was bound for, or had some intention of its own. Stupid bat! The patient grew calmer every instant, and presently said, "You needn't tie me, I shall go quietly." Without trouble, we came back to the house. I feel there is something ominous in his calm, and shall not forget this night. I think we'll leave it there, guys. Look, that was a bit of a rubbish one. I think it's sitting down, slumped, in a comfy chair that probably does it, and I should give myself a good kick, a good kicking, and elevate my heart rate as I lower my legs so that they're not resting up on the leather and poof, as we say. I'm too relaxed. I'm too chilled out. I am too chilled. Let's have a look, see if we're still recording. Does seem that we are. We've all done very well, and we're going to pull away from this recording session. We're going to wish you all a happy Valentine's Day and Valentine's Day Massacre of the Text of Dracula. That's what we're going to call this episode. Be good. Stay free. And watch out for the aliens. They're coming. It's the next big psyop. Project Bluebeam. Operation Bluebeam. It's coming. Okay, back in your cell, Mr. Renfield. Don't talk such nonsense, such arrant nonsense.